Bienvenue à l'Hôtel de Ville. Bonjour to the Corporate Jet Investor Town Hall. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone out there from in Ireland or from Irish descent. Why did St. Patrick drive the snakes out of Ireland? It's because Ryanair hadn't launched. We're now delighted to bring yet another Corporate Jet Investor Town Hall, this week sponsored by Citadel Aircraft Completions, Citadel Completions. Thanks very much to that. And today we've got five experts looking at the market and what's going on. And we're delighted to start with Jolie Howard, CEO of Le Voyage, coming to us from Hong Kong. Late at night for you as well, Jolie. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. You are one of the people who've shaped the Asian business aviation market over the last 20 years. You founded Tag Aviation Asia. You went to CIT and did a lot of aircraft finance in the region, led that. Then you went back to run Tag. And now, congratulations, you're now CEO of Le Voyage.
Thank you very much. Well, the business, the company already been in business for the last 6-7 years. My partnership with Mr. Anna Chow was something is really the right timing for us because Diana and I know each other for over 20 years. And I think we shared a similar vision in terms of how we're going to continue to build the market here in Asia. And I think in terms of, you know, being local, being, you know, people with so much experience, it's only very much the handful of people. So, you know, we're very excited that, you know, we can do this together. I think, you know, we see a lot of potential in the post-COVID. You know, I think that, you know, we look at post-COVID, but, you know, I also see it's going to be, you know, the transition phase of what it's like coming out of COVID until we get back to normal. So there's still going to be a lot of complexity in terms of traveling, particularly what we see here in Asia Pacific is a lot of international travel. You know, now with China being more bigger domestic market, but still, you know, a lot of flying involve international flying. So, you know, with Le Voyage, we do see, you know, a lot of requirement from our client. It's a B2C platform, so we strictly provide services to charter customer that's stepping up probably from potentially first class into charter or, you know, or regional already chartering client stepping up to doing more charter. So, you know, we see that as the demand will continue to increase for our region. We already have a lot of inquiry. You know, at the moment, we have a lot of borders shut down. You know, slowly some places are opening up. So we're doing a lot of preparation and investment right now, getting ourselves ready to get ready for the rebound of activity. So I think in a nutshell is we feel, you know, the great potential and what we're going to be offering. It will be something, will be more and different to, you know, how just a traditional broker will add more technology platform, you know, improve on the interfacing with client experience. It's not going to be easy to just hop on the plane to just see customer, you know, how do we reach out to client and things like that, and how do we make sure, you know, they can find us. So, you know, we'll be doing a lot of online activities as well as offline activities as what we've been doing. So, yeah, so this is all of the, you know, the initiative that we're focusing on in the in this year particularly.
And you know, you've been in the business aviation market for a long time. You've seen big highs. We saw at a time when China was, you know, responsible for nearly half of all larger cabin aircraft. You've seen tougher markets. What's your short-term prediction for Asia at the moment?
I think the prediction, well, you know, seeing, you know, what is historically, is we still have a lot of infrastructure challenges from country to country. So I think that will continue to be the case for some time. You know, the improvement are fairly slow. But, you know, you're looking at 20 years ago, it would take 14 days to get a permit to fly in China. Now you could actually do it in one day. So it's been a lot of improvement already. But going from one country to the other, I think will still be challenged in terms of the, you know, so many different countries and have so many different regulations. So I think, you know, for the operational side of flying private airplanes, whether people interested in the large cabin or the mid-size or even the new technology, electric, you know, all that they're talking about would still involve of more streamlined of infrastructure. So I think, you know, we will, the focus for us here will still be, you know, more on the mid to large cabin airplane, you know, jet airplanes that, you know, now with already existing established infrastructure, while we continue to lobby for, you know, more operationally friendly environment. So in terms of China, I think on your question is, it's you know, looking at what 5 years ago, 10 years ago, has already been a loss of creation of wealth. So I think it's still growing, will suffer from the cycle of geopolitical problems, as we've been seeing. I think will be some challenges, but the domestic market will continue to grow. So, yeah, for me, I'm, you know, fairly optimistic. I think there will be challenges ahead, but I think, you know, it's still on the growth path.
Are you optimistic because airlines are having such a tough time? Because Asia, probably more than any other region, sees business aviation squeezed out by airlines. They're, you know, they're all struggling. We've seen a lot of aircraft grounded. Do you think there's an opportunity in the short term for business aviation to gain market share at airports?
I think it will be on the, you know, before the commercial airline go back to fully operational, it will be some, yeah, you know, we're getting inquiry where people just want to come home. So, yeah, I think it will be a short term, you know, some additional flight, but I wouldn't think that will be the norm. And I think that will be a timing of opportunity. We will see that. We will pick up some additional activity. But for the long term growth, we still need to see all the other major obstacles resolved. You know, I think the market needs to build with better infrastructure and also with people who could actually, you know, afford to use this type of transport. And I think, you know, you'll see a larger segment of client coming in. You know, private flying will be more commoditized, you know, so they will look at that cost, they'll look at that convenience. So I think, you know, just like other market, this market will grow, follow those major patterns.
Do you see any big changes coming to the operator market? Hong Kong is probably the world's most competitive operator market.
Yes, it's fairly competitive in Hong Kong with quite a lot in such a small place. And it's because it's easier to do business, easier to employ people from overseas. So it's a lot of good thing, you know, establishing their headquarters here in Hong Kong. So like I said, you know, the service, it will be a lot more commoditized like we've seen in other more, you know, mature market like in the US and Europe. So at the end of the day, I think a lot of services will be supported by more of a regional service. It's going to be very challenging for an operator to be able to cover a large footprint unless they do a lot of, you know, base setup, you know, have infrastructure and people. So I think it's going to involve investment from the operator to do on a larger footprint geographically coverage, or focus on doing really well on a regional basis, because different, you know, smaller region will continue to grow, will have infrastructure and, you know, closer to the client, right? So I think those is still, you know, is going to be, you know, the norm when it grows.
So you're optimistic this year. Longer term, do you think there's a danger that many people around the world are just so focused on the US market, which is just on fire at the moment? Do you think that there's a risk that other markets will get forgotten?
I think the US has not really seen, you know, the impact like we have seen by the COVID, really. You know, I think a lot of people are focusing on the US, and the challenges we've had here in Asia Pacific has been huge, actually. Yes, you know, I think it's a very different. And again, US is such a, you know, so easy to fly around within the US. And, you know, we're still talking about international flying and where the challenges are in Asia Pacific. So, you know, I'm optimistic about the future. I think this year will still, you know, be very challenging for us. We're still not seeing the end of COVID's impact, you know, but we're seeing the light, you know, somehow at the end of the tunnel now. So, but I can't really pinpoint the time it's going to be opening up. Like I said, it will be a transitional phase of complexity of flying. But, you know, I'm optimistic about, you know, generally the future on our industry. I think, you know, it will take some time to recover. But, yeah, I hope people, you know, appreciate and understand, you know, what we're going through. And you know, we haven't had a good time, like in the US market. It's been tough.
Okay, we've got a question from a former colleague of yours, Mike Carman. Yeah. Okay. Julie, congratulations on your new venture. For High Net Worth, you have their aircraft managed by an independent operator. Describe for us how Le Voyage works in concert with the manager and makes the client's travel experience better.
The manager is actually, you know, our supplier. So we actually work with the operator. So, you know, what we're trying to build is a B2C platform. And, you know, we provide a lot of the charter to end clients. So in terms of working with the operator, is the operator can sell charter on our platform, work with us, and help the client directly who may having the aircraft managed by the operator. So the relationship is a win-win-win situation. So we all benefit from the platform that we're trying to build, and we're trying to help the operator also for our technology that we're trying to bring in is for them to manage the airplane easier, to actually do the cost management easier with the software that we're going to bring in. So, you know, it's easier for us to get quote, and we can actually have access to their quoting system, which a lot of the operator don't have a quoting system. You know, quoting a flight is something, it just, you know, could be some data in someone's head or, you know, on Excel sheets and things like that. So, you know, we will be able to help them to manage that for the client better. The same time is we bring in, you know, the sell ability to sell charter on the airplane while they also managing the aircraft for the private flying on the of the owner. So it's a win-win-win situation. So that's how the relationship will go.
Great. And another question from a former colleague, from Bob Shaberly.
Okay.
Jamie, in your region, what are you seeing as the numbers of new clients coming into the market that previously would never likely have been the owner or a charterer? And what are the key drivers to successfully be able to service these new clients?
What we've seen actually, even since COVID, there's been some new entrants in the market, new owner buying airplanes. So I think if you talk to the broker, you talk to the OEM, they would agree with that. So they actually been fairly busy. I think that also the same for other markets. So it's a sign showing that there's still, you know, people. Maybe we're not thinking now. They're thinking about having their own airplane or coming into, you know, flying private for health reason, you know, for various reasons. So I think it's been, you know, fairly, you know, what we've seen is been fairly good. So, you know, I think the key we still have to understand, you know, I think understand the culture, understand what they need to really, you know, stand on their side to know. So what we're doing is not just providing a vehicle, you know, we're also providing the continued end to end, you know, beginning of the journey to the end of the journey kind of experience as well. So I think, you know, the complexity coming out of COVID is going to be a lot more than just providing the airplane. It's going to be a lot more paperwork at airport, a lot more logistic to look after, a lot more, you know, vetting process on the airplane, you know, how clean, how it was maintained, you know, where's been, you know, the pilot credential, you know, where they've flown to. So it will be a lot more complex to do a flight, you know, coming out of COVID than we had before. So I think, you know, people involved would have to be a lot more aware and trained. So that's going to be the key, and understanding, you know, your client and the need to make sure the experience is still there. So I think that's going to be important.
Great. Suddenly getting loads of questions. Very quick thoughts on India, Graham Stevenson's asking.
India, it's still, you know, that's obviously been demand, but it's been quite challenging, you know, to operate from an operator point of view, but from a charter point of view, it's actually quite good. So, you know, as long as we can fly airplane in and do things. So depending on which side of the fence you are in, you know, for lender, you know, whether the regulation is ready, for people to feel comfortable in terms of, you know, financing an Indian registered airplane or, you know, operating there, you know, putting a lot of infrastructure resources as an operator, management, or just, you know, you're from another side of the fence, just selling airplane going in there. So I think depending on what role you play, India has a lot of potential, but it's, you know, always the investment versus the return on investment, you know, depending on what business, you know, you are doing in with India.
Great. And final question, because you've had loads, from Jean Noel at Airbus Corporate Jets. Great to see you back in the game, Julie. All the best for this new venture. Are there still public image concerns about buying new jets in mainland China?
I actually, you know, we had a period during the 2015, probably 14, there's a big thing. But the people now buying, they are genuine businesses, you know, that we've really seen. And that's a really good trend, you know. Before they were buying probably for the wrong reason. But now people buying actually have the need to travel. So the need to travel is more hindered by the infrastructure issue. I mean, getting a landing permit in China is still, it's not so much the landing, but more the parking, you know, in airport that's really congested, things like that. But I see that as it's not so much a problem now, because we do see people buying a jet, they do have a business to support, and they do have the need to travel. So it's a lot less now than what we've seen in the past. And that's a healthy trend.
Brilliant. Julie, really great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Alistair. All right. Thanks. You.
Stay safe. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, Peter, why don't you start by explaining Bold IQ to us?
Okay. Bold IQ is a technology company that's been serving the business aviation industry since about 2008. And basically, we're an optimization technology, an AI optimization technology. And we, you know, we take the resources that you have, whether it's your fleet or your crew. Then we take the demand that you have for flight requests that need to be fulfilled. You fill it in with a bunch of regulatory rules and business rules. And then through our solver, which is what our product is called, we create, again, optimized outcomes for the different operators, depending upon their particular goals.
And you've got some pretty big clients, haven't you?
We do have some pretty big clients, absolutely. NetJets is probably our most notable customer in terms of logos. Obviously, everybody knows them. And again, we've been in business aviation for a while, so we support a number of different operators from large to small.
So tell us, what sort of difference can you make to a large operator?
Well, certainly what we have found over the years doing this is the processes have evolved a great deal. Optimization has largely been a very manual or light tool like Excel or something, some tool of that nature in order to try to basically manually schedule the fleet and the crew. And we've seen an evolution of that over time where operators are recognizing optimization technology as a must-have, especially coming out of COVID in order to increase efficiencies, whether it's, you know, maximizing the demand fulfillment or minimizing something like cost, operational cost, deadhead legs, something along those lines. So that's how we generally help organizations, by trying to maximize some portion of their operation or minimize some cost aspect of the operation. And when you get a lot of demand, you have a lot of resources, you have airports with different operating hours, aircraft that can and cannot go into different airports, the math problem becomes very complicated in a hurry. And frankly, humans can't calculate that type of thing very easily, and frankly can't do it at all. So the emergence of AI technologies allows for a much quicker permutation definition. And when those outcomes through our type of technology are produced, then you have really good schedulers that are able to use that data, use the tool, instead of putting the entire burden on the scheduler themselves to try to pick out the best schedules.
I noticed in the Wheels Up investor book, which I'm sure lots of people on the call have listened to, have read, they estimate that more than 95% of the time business jets aren't being used. Is that a scheduling issue or an owner issue?
You know, I think that's a sliding scale. I think pre-COVID, it was probably more of an owner issue, but certainly we have noticed with our operators, they are able to add to their floating fleet capacity that they didn't have pre-COVID. I think some owners are looking to offset some of the cost to own and operate an aircraft, and their willingness to be just a managed aircraft and not out for charter has changed a little bit, and it's slid to try to get try to take some risk out of the game. So I do see that as a change, and it's a sliding scale from where we started, and I don't know what the end point is going to be, but it does seem to be a continuing trend to allow these aircraft to be used in a floating fleet.
And you talk about how complicated the maths is of the scheduling and the and it's really way beyond my level. But how much more efficient can you make an operator, and how complicated is it to implement?
Well, it's certainly how much more efficient you can make an operator all depends upon what the baseline is. So how well does the company do it today? But we would expect no less than 10 or 15%, and then we can get into upwards of 25 or 30%. Again, this can be on the maximization side or the minimization of cost side. So it's a hard question to answer, but we would expect double digits in terms of improvement. Again, coming from a manual process or even a semi-robust automation tool, not an optimization tool, these optimization technologies are really, really helpful. And again, the speed to be able to look at all the different possible permutations, which can run into the tens, hundreds of thousands, even millions of different combinations, that has not been seen, since the advent of AI technologies like ours. So that's, I would say it's a floating scale again, but double digits is where I'd land on that.
Okay, we've got a question from Jean-Noël Robert at Airbus Corporate Jets. How do you compute business jet reliability?
Well, I guess I don't totally understand the question. Reliability, how do you define that?
I guess he's thinking, how do you cope with AOGs when aircraft's down?
Okay, so yeah, as part, we create schedules that operators can use, and those schedules are put into production, and time moves forward, and schedules are getting executed. Business aviation is a very disruptive market. Changes happen all the time, and one of those changes can be an AOG. So this is unplanned maintenance that the aircraft has to go down, and so we have a disruption management part of our tool. So what our solver does is it looks at the existing schedule. It looks at the disruption that's about to happen, and then it can very quickly, and this is like in seconds, in the 5 to 10 second range, it can scan the existing resources that are available to try to find options that are available to make sure the demand is met, taking that aircraft out of play, and then how do you recalibrate the schedule to accommodate that flight request? Well, and the key here is leaving as much of the existing schedule intact as possible. We don't want to create further disruption by reshuffling all pilots and all crew schedules every single time there's a small disruption. The key is to solve the disruption and leave as much of the existing schedule intact as possible.
Great. And Jean-Noël was just commenting on dispatch reliability, which I guess also once you've got the data, you can tell by the fleet. What size should you start as an operator? We have big ones and small ones listening to this. How many aircraft should you start looking at getting in a proper scheduling system?
We're a SaaS technology and we're not an inexpensive technology. So that definitely speaks to the floor. We find, depending on the fleets, like a uniformity in a fleet is good for us. If you've got, 20 tails, but there's five different makes, then that is as good as if they were all the same. So from a ability to exchange aircraft in a schedule, the more resources that are similar is helpful. And I would say we set the floor at about 12 to 15 tails. Again, the cost is one piece of it. You need to be able to develop an ROI that pays for the software itself and some multiple above that in terms of economic benefits to the operator. And then, frankly, once you get below 10 or 12 tails, the complexity isn't as difficult. It's just not there. So, again, we set the floor at about a dozen tails or so.
Mike Francis from First Republic is asking, is the optimization purely looking at maximizing aircraft availability, or does it factor in increased costs too as an offset?
Yeah, it's definitely tied to a costing or a value system. So we would work with the operator specifically to define the penalties and the rewards that the optimization is going to prioritize. So it's absolutely, you know, it's a, like I said, it's a maximization tool or a minimization tool. But within that, we did, like I said, we've got a value-based system, a cost-based system, so that you can understand what the network cost is to fly a schedule.
And I know that you're working on one of the hardest problems to solve and you're using AI for it. Is there anything else you can see out there that the industry needs to make it more efficient?
I guess what I'm seeing, you know, we go to operators directly when we're trying to pitch our software, and one of our strategies is also going to the OMS companies of the world, so the Fosses and the Flexes, the Leons, you know, Barts, you know, there's lots of them out there, of course. And what I think I am seeing is, you know, we try to work with those OMS companies because we'd like to integrate with their platforms. Is that there seems to be some consolidation in product. So you've got you know, flight ops, you've got maintenance. I'm seeing consolidation more of those products, and the operators are wanting to have more of a one-stop shop versus disparate technologies that are out there. So that's what I would probably suggest moving forward, is we're going to see some more consolidation, not just in the number of players and vendors that are in the market, but also the types of products that are in a particular platform. I think it's going to get wider to service more of the industry on, a one-stop shop type of philosophy.
Peter, thanks so much for joining us. Peter Moe, Business Development Director, Bold IQ. And we'll also have to have Shelley Freeman, CEO, another time. Thanks so much, Johnny.
You got it. No problem.
I'm now delighted to go back to the UK. So as I've been here the whole time. Alan Cunningham, partner at DLA Piper. Alan, how are you?
I'm excellent, Alistair. Had my jab yesterday, doing very well.
Did you have your jab? I didn't think you were old enough.
Just about a week into it.
Great to see you. You're obviously a leading aircraft transaction lawyer in the UK. What are you focused on at the moment?
Well, I would say that last year, 2020, was probably our busiest year since 2008. I'd say we'd been very busy since July 2019. And when the pandemic came about this time last year, we obviously were quite worried that it would slow down, and it didn't slow down at all. So I would say that the busiest things that we've been doing, I think the sales and purchases of used aircraft have been as busy as I've ever seen it in the last, say, 15 odd years. We're probably doing two or three closings a month, every month for the last, say, 18 months, so that's great. I would say that, you know, during the main part of the pandemic, I would say that, you know, there's not many insolvencies. There are probably a few more disputes, people arguing about money, about engineering disputes, financial disputes, that kind of stuff, shareholder disputes. Not so much new to bank financing. I think during the pandemic, the banks, although they're absolutely solvent and we're in a good position to come out of the pandemic, they've been a bit cautious in the sense they want to look after their existing customers, and they don't really want to do anything too exotic straight away. I'd say at the start of the pandemic, we had a lot of owners ready to take delivery of brand new aircraft who were looking for ways to get out of the contract, get the deposits back and that kind of stuff. None of them got out of the contracts. Everybody completed. Some of them flipped their aircraft straight away. Some of them have kept their aircraft in the long term. And I would say that they're probably all pretty happy with the outcome that they got. So overall, I would say, given it's been a pandemic, you know, it's been for lawyers in particular, you know, a very busy time. And I've probably not been as confident about the next 12 months as I have at any time in my career.
Has it annoyed you watching everyone out there making sourdough and, you know, having a wonderful time?
Yeah, it's annoyed me watching my family all having a great time with their feet up and all that kind of stuff, where we're all slaving and paying 52% tax. But look, it's It could have been a lot different because, you know, at the time we were genuinely worried as a firm, as a practice, you know, all of our competitors, how it would turn out. And, you know, most well-hedged law firms have had, you know, very good years.
So one of the big stories in the last few months has been the investigation into Aircraft Guarantee Trust and Wright Brothers. Yep. You've been involved in it.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on what's going to happen next?
Well, I think that escrow and title agents in general have always done a terrific job for our clients. Some of our clients have not wanted to use escrow and title agents because they just didn't understand them. And so they would insist on using an Oklahoma law firm like, you know, Crandon Levy or McAfee and Taft. But most of them would go along with the escrow agency title agent because that was the market. And I think that in order for those escrow agents to thrive and continue to do good business, they're going to have to find a way, a simplified message of explaining to the world how they work, how they're regulated, and why you know, a client's money is safe with them. And if I can just give you a quick example, about nearly 20 years ago, I was working in Hong Kong and we had a delegation over from the Isle of Man who wanted to know why the Cayman Islands was so successful in commercial aviation. And I explained it to them on the basis that when you are told about the Cayman Islands tax regime, it takes about 5 seconds, there is no tax. Whereas in the Isle of Man, it was always like ifs or buts, and it was a bit of a hard luck story and how you could get your money back and all that kind of stuff. And people had just gone to sleep by that point. So I think that with escrow agents, they really need to explain to people, what does it mean to be bonded? What does it mean to be insured? What does it mean to have client funds segregated and that kind of stuff? And they need to be able to do that in a very clear way, with household names behind them, like, you know, AIG, that kind of stuff. And so otherwise, clients will just think it's too complicated. We know how law firms work. Let's just use a law firm in Oklahoma.
Okay. And do you see a change coming to transactions? Do you think we've got a trend towards greater transparency and greater openness, or is nothing going to change?
Well, I think that there's going to be a lot more transactions. I think that we're going to go into a period of time where we have, I'm expecting a very strong growth period of about 5 or more years. And I think it's going to be a fantastic time to be in the industry. I think that transactions, people are always trying to streamline them. They're always trying to be more transparent. I think that I don't really think it's very complicated, if I'm honest. You know, quite often it's an LOI, it's an aircraft sale and purchase agreement, it's documents and cash in escrow, it's filing documents at the end. So I don't think it needs to be cleaned up much in that sense. But I think that with the trust structures, which is probably what you're talking about, and with the escrow arrangements, look, the trust structures themselves are normal, almost British ideas, in the sense that we would do offshore stuff all the time, you know, aircraft in the Cayman Islands, Bermuda, Isle of Man, based in China. We would not have a problem with that. So I thought it was quite interesting that the sealed indictment, or the unsealed indictment rather, made great play that the place in East Texas where it was ran from didn't have an airport. I mean, it's just... it shows the mentality of what does offshore business mean. I think if the US was to be opportunistic, they would say this is a great opportunity to project soft power, to project the power of the FAA, to have lots of FAA aircraft flying around the world, but make sure they're regulated in a, if you like, a global system, which is the American system, rather than, you know, pushing them all away and saying, you know, it's foreign, we don't understand it, so, you know, please go to Bermuda or San Marino or wherever. I think they will take that second approach, if I'm honest, because the industry just, you know, it won't be able to fight back against that. It's too complicated idea. But for me, the trust structures are standard. They're excellent. But I think they're going to be too complicated for the domestic US audience.
Okay, what's your final prediction for the next 5 years? You're optimistic, Rosie. What's going to drive it?
I think there'll be a lot more people moving from, you know, first class in business to charter. I took a walk around a client's hangar, engineering hangar, in September. There were probably maybe 8 or 10 older challenges, that kind of stuff, in the hangar, all being refurbished. Every one had already been sold to a first-time aircraft owner. So I think we're going to get a lot of new entrants into charter, a lot of new entrants into aircraft ownership. I think it's great that the banks are very solvent, and so they'll be keen to lend as we come out of the pandemic. Government stimulus is going to be huge. We've got now 130% writing down allowances in the UK, which is, you know, a terrific incentive. And I think that there's going to be a lot of focus on quality rather than quantity, on privacy, on almost like a concierge service to travel rather than a commoditized, you know, impersonal service. So I think the future looks terrific, if I'm honest.
Brilliant. Great. That is really upbeat and cheery. Anything else you'd want to add?
Well, I think that, you know, what we will see is probably, I think, a few more insolvencies. We haven't seen very many insolvencies. Our firm is still working on the ZetaJet Chapter 7 insolvency.
How's that going?
It's a bit punchy, I think. You know, aggressive, I'd describe it as. I think that there will be some more insolvencies because they're going to be, in the pandemic, they're going to be winners and losers. You know, if you own, I don't know, Zoom or Crowdcast, you're going to have a lot of cash to spend. And if you own, I don't know, Topshop, not so much. So I think we're going to see some insolvencies and some more repossessions. We're seeing a number of repossessions, but the market's hot enough to deal with them, and the demand is there to get rid of, you know, defaulted aircraft.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Alan. Great to see you. And congratulations on getting your job.
Thank you. Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
And now, delighted to go to Dave Edwards. Dave, how are you?
I'm very well. Was that a setup with going for very positive to Dave Edwards?
It was. And Brexit to non-Brexit.
Exactly.
You're looking young, fresh, healthy, and you've had your jab last week.
Correct. I've lost 4 stone since lockdown. So I've probably put something to good use. So yeah.
That's amazing. You're looking super young. I'm surprised they gave you your jab.
Well, you can blame the pre-existing conditions from the great genes my parents gave me, if you like. I've also gone for the Britney Spears haircut as well.
I know. I think earlier John Noel commented on my haircut. Just worth pointing out that hairdressers in the UK have been shut since December. It's an RPA. You know, it's not great here. So, Dave, really cheery, upbeat forecast from Alan. What's your forecast for the next couple of years?
I don't think 2021 is going to be a great deal different, just because we've still got the challenges of the vaccine rollout more than anything, haven't we? And until we get past that and we get some way of being able to travel, whether that's the passports for vaccines or whatever, until that really comes about, it's going to be a bit difficult for the market to come back. If you kind of look at the statistics from, I guess the challenge now is it, every statistic related to the UK is obviously a Brexit and COVID statistic. I can't split down the middle where they begin and where they end. But the UK market at the moment in terms of charter flying is about 52% down on where it was in February last year. So, you know, we can be all upbeat, as a lot of people are, about how great the potential is. But obviously, in reality, that's a pretty dire number to be dealing with. And if you break it down really kind of granularly into individual UK AOCs, it's some horrific numbers in terms of how little flying they're doing compared to this time last year. As I say, COVID, Brexit, I'm not sure which is the easiest to blame this on.
There's always going to be winners. say, are you more optimistic about European mainland
ASX? Yeah, certainly. I mean, everybody is being hit by COVID. That's the biggest challenge we've all got. But, you know, hopefully, as we all start getting there by the end of this year, we'll be a bit more able to travel. Maybe the summer will be a bit more of a relief for all of us. We'll be allowed to move again. But, yeah, certainly EU operators aren't seeing those kind of 89, 84, 62, 76% reductions in movements compared to kind of this time last year. So it's a good position for EU operators to be in with the Brexit negotiation stuff. But COVID needs to go, and then we can actually maybe have a bit more of a clearer image of what the root cause of these things are.
So you've got a long career as an operator, investor. You've worked as a restructuring. What should people on the call be thinking about at the moment?
If you're in the UK, just a beer in a pub. If you're anywhere else in the world, I don't know. No, at the moment, I think it's, you know, we've got this great opportunity, particularly the charter sector has this opportunity ahead of the scheduled airlines to get in and do a bit of marketing for what we do. We need to be sort of, the mindset needs to be that we need to hook those people in, keep them. I've used the term one and done before. We don't need them to be one and done users. We need to hook them in. The challenge we've got is this kind of slow recovery from COVID, if you like, does give the scheduled carriers time to adapt. And if you've been looking at some of the market releases this week by some of the major flag carriers, they do have a very good and defined plan on how to get aircraft back into service, not for Johnny Christmas, but apart from the A380 maybe. But everything else seems to have a sort of general idea when it's going to come back into service. So as a corporate aviation world, we've got a little bit of time now to get ahead of that curve, to get in and hook people in and keep them in. To my mind, I think we need to be careful about what we're talking about, because, you know, the statistics that have come out over the last 12 months have very much focused on the leisure market, which is great for those of us who are getting paid by aircraft flying. But at the same time, you know, we're meant to be a business industry, and we don't want to lose the public's kind of support for what we do.
There is that worry, isn't there? Every time you see a headline about private aviation going well, it's not that long ago that you'd see a headline about fat cats flying off and damaging. And this is your Air Charter Association former hat on here. Do you think the industry's fundamentally changed in the last year?
This must be year 24, 25 for me of business aviation. We've had years that have totally changed the industry in the past, and yet we are pretty much still doing what I did 25 years ago at heart. So it all of these moments provide a different set of circumstances which the industry has to jump on. And the kind of the rise of fractional ownership at the moment in its various forms, whether I'm with my old Air Charter Association hat, I'm comfortable with that is another matter. But, you know, that's happened before. We can go back in numerous times and see fractional ownership products which haven't actually got anywhere other than the great fanfare at the beginning. So has it fundamentally changed? No, I don't think so. I think it's probably pretty much, it will come back to what it was. As I suspect after 12 months of this, we will come back to what we're doing. I think that whole kind of, the first 6 months we were all going on about how we'll never travel for business meetings again. You and I think we've spoken offline. I cannot get to Heathrow faster than anyone else on this call. I want to travel for business. I have probably no reason to at the moment, but I just want to travel. And particularly when you're in the consulting world, as I am, which, as we know, is a networking opportunity kind of a place. I've rarely picked up any business from these kind of things, although, you know, I am available, everybody. But all of it comes down to bumping into people in the right place at the right time, having a coffee with somebody, having a beer at CJI with somebody invariably brings you some element of consulting work. So I need to travel. And I think that pretty much breaks down our entire industry. We're an industry of I was going to say egos, that's not very fair, but personalities. We love to see each other. We love to do business together, and we do it face to face better than we do in any other forum. So, my gut feeling is it's not changed forever.
I think one good reason to fly again is that you're worried about losing your frequent flyer status.
It keeps rolling over. That's the thing.
Question from Andy Hudson. Should the industry wait for the authorities to design a COVID vaccine passport, or should we collaborate and lead the industry, which others will follow?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's down to us, but, you know, I'm not in a trade association anymore. So the joys of trade associations are you need to get trade associations to talk to each other and agree on things before you kind of get the industry to go along with it as well. So we can come up with something as a sector, which is, you know, which is functional and works. The challenges are that we have commercial involvement in things. So maybe everybody who has a flight operations software system would want to devise their own. BA's app is going to have it on Emirates. We've got one rolling out very shortly. So we're already into that kind of disjointed thing. I think on something this big, which is so kind of fundamental to how we travel, it would be lovely if we could do it ourselves, but for global recognition of this to happen so that we can actually just get on with it and not have to argue at the border with a different set of regulations. And, you know, it says here in paragraph 3.5, we just go, you know, we take on an ICAO system or an IATA system. It's not beyond the wit of man. I'm pretty sure they are working on those quite heavily because, I mean, for one reason and one reason only, politicians are denying it's being discussed. So, you know, therefore, it must be close to being rolled out anyway.
There's a comment from Robert Baltus at the European Business Aviation Association saying, we talk to and with everybody, Dave, but yes, fully agree.
One of the better ones, obviously.
So you don't think industry's fundamentally changed. Do you think we've been given an opportunity to get people in and grow, not just one and done?
Yeah, we have. And that comes down to everyone who's in it. And I think one of the things I've been finding myself involved in recently is legal disputes between operators and brokers, which is something fairly new to me, to be honest, because 25 years of this haven't really been involved in court cases that often, from where you haven't been able to sort of sit back and come to some agreement between each other. But it's very clear that that seems to be kind of where some of the market has got to, which is what I've been saying for a number of years. This continual drive to the bottom on pricing keeps impacting operators in the pocket. And at some point, operators can't just suck it up. They can't just keep taking those costs on board. So there seems to be a lot more legal stuff going on now between operators and brokers on non-payment of cancellation fees in general, reasons behind cancellations and things like that. So we need to be doing that whole thing as an industry, not fighting amongst ourselves so much. But, you know, it's a commercial competitive market, isn't it? If you look at the statistics for a quoting platform that does exist, I think they're uptake of users increased dramatically as the kind of furlough scheme arrived across Europe 12 months ago, because everybody who was being made redundant or furloughed was starting up as an independent broker. So, you know, that market won't go away, and getting every salesperson in the world to agree on a way forward where nobody kind of tries to undercut each other to get business, well, yeah, beyond the wit of me by some stretch. But it's a great opportunity if we can just, deliver the benefits of business aviation to everybody.
There's Colin Dunn from Jetcraft said, I had a business development meeting in Istanbul today. It felt awesome. Parts of the world are open. And I think there is this pent-up demand for business travel. Do you see that could be a shortage of lift? Do you think if the individual travelers still keep coming, or if and corporates return and want to fly on business aviation, do you think charter rates could rise?
I would hope charter rates won't rise, because they haven't really done anything other than go down. But it would be nice if we all took that kind of high moral ground of let's just make the money that we used to make pre-COVID. Happy Paddy's Day, by the way, Colin. And I saw your video in Dubai, which I was very, very jealous of somebody being in Dubai, I have to admit. So I've now forgotten what your question was. That's ridiculous.
Charter rates going up.
Yeah, so charter rates, you know, I hope we don't change the kind of the situation for the NGs. Let's try and recover them to what they were maybe 2 years ago. But let's not, you know, go overboard. There's still an awful lot of spare capacity in the market at the moment before we'd be kind of worrying about demand outstripping supply, I suspect.
Okay, we've seen a lot of money coming into business aviation. There's the Signature deal, Wheels Up, SPAC, Blade, lots of the eVTOL ones, JB and Archer. What's your thoughts on this new investment coming in? Will they all make money?
We can go into analogies, if you like, and look at other industries where these kind of investments have happened. There's always people who will make money. There are potentially people who make money and disappear and leave before they have to make the money. But it's, you know, again, I always think of every story to do with our sector as generally a marketing opportunity. It's great that it's raising the profile of the industry. But, you know, in those 25 years, there's been quite a few people who've come to the market with billions and walked away with nothing at the end of the day, having not really changed anything at all. So, it'd be interesting to see the world of finance. I'm sure people on this call obviously know a great deal more than I do, but the world of finance and the world of how you value companies is nothing like I learnt anymore at university. And it's kind of not how I've valued the stuff that I've got involved in. I've looked for businesses that have made a profit and perhaps have a different kind of event horizon on it. And I'm looking towards 65 rather than 45 next year. So maybe it's that. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of people who perhaps don't get what they thought they might be getting at the end of the day. But there will be successful ones. And that's the joys of investing in things like this, isn't it?
Okay.
That was really on the fence, I think.
That was really on the fence. That was clearly, I'm looking for consulting.
Exactly. available on...
yeah, very much available. We'll forward on Dave's email if anyone needs it. you're naturally a glass of Guinness half-empty person, as it's St. Patrick's Day.
I'm a realist. That's what I am. I just try and tell you what I think is actually going to happen. And invariably, as boring as it is, I'm usually not that far off what actually comes to fruition at the end. I'm not the salesperson and I'm not the person who's, you know, trying to get the column inches really on where we are. So I follow your position compared to other callers over the past 12 months. But I'm a realist. That's all.
And so you're not. The industry's in a much better place than we thought it would be a year ago.
Yeah.
But it might not be in the amazing place that some people think it will be in a year's time.
Yeah, and I don't think it's in the amazing place that some people are saying it is today, because, like, you know, fact check. It's quite a useful thing. I think we've all learned over the last 4 years that fact checking is a fairly useful thing to do. And it's really easy to get access to statistics. And there are people who are doing exactly what they say, who I really appreciate them being out there saying that. And there are others who have a different way of presenting it compared to what the numbers behind the statistics say. So, like I say, UK AOC is at the moment 52% down on where they were last year in terms of flying. COVID or Brexit, don't know. But, you know, that's not a great position to be in. And I'm trying to find every positive thing in that, other than it's not 60% down, but it's still 52% down. So we have a long way to go to be where we were a year ago. But we have all of the tools within our toolbox to make the most of every bit of that opportunity that's in front of us before the scheduled airlines recover and perhaps close that gap for us a bit.
Brilliant. Dave, thank you so much for that really nice summary.
Thank you.
And great to you.
And you.
So thanks very much to Dave Edwards of Windsor Capital, also Alan Cunningham from DLA Piper, Peter Moe, Business Development Director of Bold IQ, and Jodie Howard, CEO of Le Voyage. Thanks so much for joining us. I think it's almost a year we've been doing these. We're back in 2 weeks' time. All of them are available on your favourite podcast platform. Thanks so much to Citadel Completions. If you're looking to get an aircraft completed, please give them a call. And thank you so much to everyone for joining us. We'll see you all in 2 weeks. And happy St. Patrick's Day. And stay safe.